JC2S, Part 2.
Number 3B.
All right, so we take a look now at that matrix. The first one I mentioned on page 102 in the study aid, and we'll work with that to begin with, and then we'll look at the one on 105. Now, what we see then, we're learning to reason in this symphonic structure, really as it is purpose is to bring forth the subject of God. So here we see, as we've said now, the subject is Christian Science, and we're going to see now how that subject is brought out through the fourfold operation. It's, as I've said now, it's this matrix is presenting the dynamics of the science of Christian Science. And therefore, that's why it is in a fourfold operation. So we have 16 differentiated aspects of that dynamic subject of the science of Christian Science. And therefore, we see that it is brought out, therefore, through the word Christ, Christianity, and science. And the first four word chapters we now know have the tonality of the I, or absolute Christian Science, which in a matrix we always define those specific indices. Therefore, the indice I of the word is the revelation of God's nature. Therefore, when we read always in the Dorley-Kapler line, a matrix, the dominant, as we now see, is vertical, the vertical flow. So we look then at the word of absolute Christian Science, and that then is defined as the revelation, as I just said, of God's nature, as we see right there in the matrix. Now, that word in absolute Christian Science, as we have seen, has its tonality through the first, second, third, and fourth chapters. Therefore, we see that the revelation of God's nature is in the chapter prayer, but that revelation of God's nature is reflects itself and has an impact on Christian Science. So here, the chapter prayer, as the word is the word, shows that subject of the revelation of God's nature as it is accepted. Therefore, it is the revelation of God's nature from the standpoint of the word, accepting the proposition, accepting that premise. That's always the word, accepting that statement. That's the word. So we see now, how can we hear that in the chapter of prayer? How the revelation of God's nature comes to us and causes us to accept that nature. So Max has shown us in the epitome of the chapter prayer, right there on page 102, we look up to that chapter 1 box, and we see then the revelation of God's nature. That is the word in its absolute Christian Science tone. We can hear it. Now that's going to impact the word in the relative. It's going to have an effect on Christian Science, and it's going to make us accept God's nature in us. You hear that blending in that particular tone. If we don't, then we can have this afternoon to exercise it with us ourselves, or perhaps to get together in groups and drill ourselves. You know how Mrs. Eddy says, the platoons of Christian Science must be thoroughly drilled. So I would like to, at our breaks, we hopefully will not need evening classes. So either at the breaks in the afternoon or the evening classes, I always like it if you get together without designating who you get together with, that spontaneously happens, or whether you should get together with someone or just do it on your own. However you want to do it, we should drill. I would like what I present then during the day is drilled in the evening, so I'm purposefully not having evening classes so that it is left open for these drilling sessions, these exercise sessions, as I say, which will come spontaneously forth from you, however you like it to happen, individually or collectively. Now, we see, therefore, that's what one would do. Drill oneself. Can I hear the blending of the word as the word in prayer? Then we say, all right. We see the word, the revelation of God's nature. We saw that it was in prayer, and it's also now going to be in the Atonement Eucharist because it's the word. It's a word chapter, so we come to Atonement and Eucharist Epitome, and we say, oh, yes, there it is. It's the revelation of God's nature. Max starts out the epitome with the word, vertical tone, God's nature. As in Atonement and Eucharist, it crosses with its impact on Christian Science of the Christ, which should have some tone of the power of manifestation in spite of error in the epitome. So we see now the word impacting the Christ at Atonement and Eucharist then gives us the revelation of God's nature impacting the Christ then manifests itself in us in spite of the ungodlike in us. And then the revelation of God's nature, the word in marriage is there, God's nature, seen in the epitome. And that's going to have an impact on Christian Science and Christianity to an exalted being. So when the revelation of God's nature comes to us, what does it do? It causes us on the human to demonstrate itself in us as a higher humanhood. The word as Christianity. Then, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, having the same word tone, the revelation of God's nature comes to us, but it has an impact on Christian Science with the scientific science tone. What does that do to us? It says, therefore, it causes us that this nature can only be understood by scientific methods of understanding. It's not so hard, is it? Quite easy. And then we just drill, just simple drillings, just going over 1 plus 1 is 2, 1 plus 1 is 2, 2 plus 2 is 4. You see, we're just learning our numeration tables, how to think symphonically. Just now that simple, we go over it, and it tells us a story. It says, isn't this wonderful that this subject of truth in the 6,000-year period, which is science and consciousness at work in the economy of being. I'm not only learning through the method of science what reality is, but this textbook is also showing me how I can become one with reality. And it first shows me here at the subject of prayer that the revelations of God's nature comes to me, and all I have to do is accept God's nature in me. And therefore, if I do that, if I accept God's nature in me, that has an impact on my consciousness. I'm consciousness building in this chapter. It's going to help me throw off the old man and put on the new man. Because when I do that, then my consciousness finally at the 16th chapter is going to understand that it is the divine infinite calculus. So I'm making my first step through science and understanding in this first chapter of prayer towards knowing that I am that calculus as Jesus was. This is enabling me to do that. So I accept God's nature in me. God's nature through the prayer of true desire, through the prayer of true reflection, through the prayer of sinlessness, through the prayer of obedience to God, through the prayers of that I begin to throw off the old consciousness and put on the new. That's thinking symphonically, all the tones are there of this whole place value in a general way. Okay, because there was still the subtones that I didn't touch on, but that doesn't matter. It gives that overall melody. Working as an artist, always from the whole to the part, as a sculptor from the big block of stone to the details, isn't it? Never working from the little details to the whole. So we come on again and we say, all right, with the story, that's wonderful. Therefore, if science and consciousness is now at work in the 6,000-year period, it is not only in prayer showing me that if the revelation of God's nature as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love through those prayers of prayer are accepted in me, then that in atonement and Eucharist is going to do something. It has a Christ, that very acceptance of God's nature in us has a Christ. It operates in spite of the erroneous consciousness in me, so I'm making another step towards debunking mortal consciousness within me. Therefore, at Atonement and Eucharist, I allow that Word of God to bring the revelation of God's nature to me and to let it manifest itself in me in spite of all the ungodlike. So therefore, I allow an atonement with that nature, but I also know I have a Eucharist, that Christ is going to take something away from me that isn't like the nature of God. And then I say, gee, this is wonderful. It's so practical that if I go on to marriage, if I have obeyed the revelation of God's nature in prayer and accepted that nature, and if I let the Christ take away from me all that is unlike that nature, in me, then the outcome of the revelation of God's nature in me is that I'm going to demonstrate a higher sense of humanhood at this point, higher sense of the laws of morality, a higher sense of human life in the job, in the business, in the marriage, with the family. And then it says, well, if that revelation of God's nature comes to me, how can I understand it? Oh, well, Christian Science versus Spiritualism says don't mix it. Don't mix it with any other methods. Just, it can only be understood, only is very important there, through scientific methods of understanding, through spiritually scientific methods of understanding, never through mental methods of intuition, as they see today that we can understand things through intuition. That has nothing to do with scientific methods, or that we can understand it through the five physical senses. That has nothing to do with the scientific methods of understanding through spiritual sense and soul sense, only through the channels of Spirit God and never through the channels of any unscientific methods. So we already have a wonderful sense of the word of in Christian Science, how we allow that revelation of God's nature to come in us and manifest itself in us and cause already quite a debunking of mortal consciousness. Then we go on to the Christ and we say, yes, that's right. We have just at the word made that statement that we have said, I allow it to happen. I will allow that statement to come into my life. But I see that was just a statement in those chapters, that actually God's going to make it do it in my life. I'm not going to make that revelation happen in my life. How can I? It's the Christ that is going to do it. I may for a day or so be able to welcome that revelation of God's nature in my life, but I know from the human one day I'm good and one day I'm bad. One day I allow it to happen and the next day I don't. That's that Paul sense, that which I should do, I just don't. So we usually don't do it. That's what Mrs. Eddy says in the sixth chapter. We have all these excuses of why we can't go to the party on the science of being. Well, the relatives are coming this week and I can't quite do it. And well, when I quit the job, I'll do it, or excuse, excuse, excuse. So we know the excuses will come in. But thank goodness there's the Christ. Because the Christ, we say, as that next standpoint, it's going to make me do it. It's going to make me accept that revelation of God's nature in my life. Because that Christ is a self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting system. And it gets after me. I can't get away from it. I want to be a Jonah. I want to run. I want to go hide in the belly of a whale. But it didn't work. Spit up onto the land again. So I figure I've learned through the Bible that it's never going to work. I've already learned through the minor prophets that God's going to come and grind me to powder and grind everything in me that isn't like God's nature. So I can't get away from it. So I better let it happen. So the Christ says, I've learned now through the Christ matrix, I better not resist it. If I resist it, I'm just going to suffer. So I now have that intelligence of mind I've built up through the Bible that I'm now going to let it happen. I'm not going to resist it. And anyhow, I'm going to let it happen. How? Through faith? No. I'm already at the point of truth in the 6,000-year period. I already know that faith doesn't do it, that I've learned now to let it happen through science and understanding. So I'm going to accept the scientific operation of the Christ and let that Christ bring to me now the revelation of God's nature. That's that translation of God to idea. What's God translating to us? God's nature, the Word. So that's God now does that through the next four chapters. God brings to us. We start getting the Christ in its absolute sense that God comes to man. And it will do something to man. It's going to overturn everything now by itself in us that isn't like God. And not only does it to us, but it will do to the family and it will do to the universe. As Mrs. Eddy says in the prose works, that we shouldn't tend the regulator of mankind. That God will get after us for trying to adjust what he adjusts. So God's not only doing this to us in these chapters, but for the universe, including man. So I know that this is happening for me, my family, and for the universe. So I bring in this whole individual, collective, and universal impact of this subject to the world, including me. So I see now that that translation of the nature in the fifth chapter of the Christ is the Word just has to be accepted. That's all animal magnetism asked of me, is just to accept the translation of God to its idea. Just accept the Christ in my life. Let that nature come. So as we accept that Christ translation, the ungodlike is going to be translated back into its native nothingness. It hasn't happened yet at Animal Magnetism Unmasked. I just take the proposition that I'm going to accept it and let it happen in my life. I'm going to see that no other power is operating in my life but that power of God coming to man. Only the Christ translation is going on in the universe, including man. No other power is at work. And that's handling animal magnetism, because as we'll see, animal magnetism is only the belief that some other power is going on besides God. So therefore, I accept at this point that only the power of the Christ is at work. There's no other power. And what I called evil is just good misunderstood, that the armies of evil are the armies of the Lord. And so therefore, I'm going to accept the translation. Then at the point of science, theology, and medicine, that translation occurs. Again, the overall tonality of the Christ is there. We're accepting at Animal Magnetism Unmasked the translation to happen in our life. We're accepting that proposition. And now it happens at science, theology, and medicine. We begin to get that overturning where we hear the Christ in its absolute sense, the translation of God to man in this chapter, and we hear how that Christ in its absolute sense, as I said, the translation of God to man, has its impact on our lives of Christian science in the relative sense of the manifestation of that translation in spite of the erroneous consciousness within us. So now that's that whole subject of the Christ in the Christ, of what we know as in the textbook on 115 of the first translation. The translation of immortal mind, that translation of God to idea, bringing us God's nature as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And therefore, when it brings to us God's nature, and the Christ translation manifests itself, how? Through the second translation on page 115. By retranslating out of us everything that isn't like that nature. So here we get coming to us those real constituents of being. It's in this chapter where we have the Christ bringing us to us the nature of mind, the first subject in science, theology, and medicine, bringing to us the nature of spirit, the second subject, the nature of soul, the third subject, the nature of principle, the fourth subject, the nature of life, the fifth subject, the nature of truth, the sixth subject, and the overall tonality of nature of love, the seventh subject. Here we get the revelation of that nature. All the way up to this point, the Word has just been saying, it's coming, it's coming. It makes the statement. And the Christ says, I bring it to you. But first is the Christ is the Word, you accept it, don't resist it, and now it comes. See, that's why she wanted to put the sixth chapter first, because it comes at this point. You get it. That's why it says here, as the epitome, the Christ translation manifests itself by retranslating the false constituents into the true constituents of being. We have now the revelation of God's nature in science, theology, medicine, and our life at this point of the Christ. It brings it to us and takes away from us everything that isn't like the nature. Can we hear? Good. So therefore, we were happy to see, I see that Mrs. Eddy did want to put this chapter first, because I see how she would have wanted to say, look at, here are the true constituents. Here they are. God brings them to us. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's God's nature, and it's going to retranslate out of us everything that isn't like mind, called mortal mind, everything that isn't like spirit, called matter, everything that isn't like soul, called sense testimony, everything that isn't like principle, called personality, everything that isn't like life, called dead organization, everything that isn't like truth, called false remedies, everything that isn't like love, something that operates for no plan at all. And yet she said, no, God had to graciously prepare me. I had to first go through the word chapters of understanding that that's going to be coming and getting me prepared for the coming of the Christ. I needed those first four chapters of the word to say, hearken, hearken, it's coming, it's coming. And I needed the Christ, as the word said, okay, I'm getting ready for it, I'm accepting it, all right, here it comes. And it does its thing, you see. So we see the logical order of these chapters in the tonality, and then we come to the Christ at Christianity and said, oh, that's going to have an impact on the human, an impact on our life. It's going to exalt us. It's going to do something to the human. That's the Christianity tone, and says, yes, that translation of God to us is going to retranslate a mortal into a mortal, immortal. Because a mortal is just anyhow a consciousness. See, science and consciousness is now at work. A mortal is only a consciousness filled with these false constituents of reality. And once the Christ has taken away these false constituents of reality, it simultaneously has let me see that the belief that I was a mortal has been retranslated back into the fact that I've always been in white garments, always an immortal. And we say, gee, that's wonderful. I'm going to continue to let the Christ happen. And I go on to footsteps of truth. And it says, oh, gee, then all the footsteps are footsteps of truth. Whether there are human footsteps that we seem to be taking or the divine footsteps that we're taking, they're all the Christ footsteps, the footsteps of the Christ truth. That's the only thing going on in our life. And we say, now I see from the standpoint of the footsteps of truth that it's only been this Christ translation and retranslation going on in my life, and it's only been going on in consciousness, in understanding, and that it has taken me on a journey, but it's been a journey of consciousness. And so therefore it has translated out of me an unscientific consciousness, which was built on the constituents, as we will see, of mythology, of just mortal mind, matter, body, sense testimony, personality, life, death, mortal consciousness and imperfection. Once those constituents are out of my consciousness, I now have a scientific consciousness based on the nature of God. And that has happened in our life, in spite of us. So then we say, oh, what's the outcome of the word and the Christ? Now that I have listened to the hearkening of the word, that God's nature is coming to me, and I was intelligent enough to let science happen in my life and not to resist it, not to suffer. I let that translation go on in my consciousness. It's beginning to debunk myself of mortal consciousness, so I'm going to be able to have that consciousness that Jesus had. I'm moving closer towards that state of the 16th chapter that's going to impel me into the 7,000-year period of the language of spirit, the language of divine science, the language of a spiritual consciousness. I only have 8 more chapters to go through here in life experience, and I'll be debunked of mortal consciousness. So I say, all right, what does the Christianity chapters have to say about this journey of the 6,000-year period of truth? Well, a lot. Christianity is always the outcome of the Word and the Christ in our life, and says, well, the outcome of through science allowing that translation to go on in our life, the outcome is the realm of ideas. We enter into the ideational realm where God's nature and our nature are now one, where God and man are one. The Christ is always that which is going to make the spiritual agreement between God and man. So the Christ has now made the Word what God's nature is, and my nature the same. Through that whole operation of those Christ chapters, I now say, oh, well, God's nature and my nature are one in Christianity. You have that agreement going on. So we enter the realm of ideas. Certainly it's not the realm of mortal man or the realm of the human man, but the realm of ideas. That's what we are, isn't that man? Man is idea, the image and likeness of God. We are not a mind-matter-body belief at this point. We've allowed the Christ to take that away from us and to see that we are a mind-spirit-soul identity. We are the image and likeness of God. We're pure reflection. We're idea. And an idea cannot be destroyed, because in order to destroy an idea, you'd have to destroy the principle. And if I'm just idea or image that exists in the principle, therefore I cannot, as an idea, be destroyed. And that's man. And that's what these chapters are going to tell me, what the universe, including man, is like as idea, as pure reflection. No longer consisting of the belief that I am mind in a matter body. That's gone. I've been healed of that. I can see that what science, theology, and medicine has healed me of is the belief then that I am immortal, that has taken away those false constituents of mortal mind, matter, and body, and has left me seeing that I am pure idea. Therefore, shows me that an idea can't suffer. Only matter suffer. So I don't have that sense that my body has pain or my body suffers. How can an idea suffer? An idea is one with its principle. And as idea, it's the answer to matter. So we enter into an ideational universe, a universe of pure reflection, a universe which is inseparably united to its principle, as I said, that cannot be destroyed. The only way you can destroy now the universe, including man, is we'd have to destroy the principle. And as we saw last week in my class one, even Gaddafi can't kill the universe and destroy it with any atomic bombs, because the universe is pure idea. And when you touch idea, it cannot be destroyed. As it was said about the massacre in China, you cannot massacre an idea. That's what Ronald Reagan said, and that is true.